On the show today, President Joe Biden addresses the NATO summit.
We will not waver. We will not waver. I mean that. Our commitment to Ukraine will not weaken.
Plus, is the Russia-Ukraine grain deal in jeopardy?
But the agreement needs to be renewed every 60 days. Moscow says it will only agree to another extension if international sanctions are eased to allow the export of Russian grain and fertilizer.
And later, you may not need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows, but a climate scientist can sure help us make sense of this summer's heat. Today is Thursday, July 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. From VOA headquarters in Washington, I'm Steve Karish. Wrapping up the NATO summit in Lithuania, President Joe Biden delivered an address highlighting how Washington and its allies are supporting Ukraine, defending democratic values, and taking action to address global challenges. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wiedekuswara has this report.
Optimistic resolve for Ukraine.
We will not waver. We will not waver. I mean that. Our commitment to Ukraine will not weaken. We will stand for liberty and freedom today, tomorrow, and for as long as it takes.
And a stern warning to Moscow.
Putin still wrongly believes that he can outlast Ukraine. He can't believe it's their land, their country, and their future. And even after all this time, Putin still doubts our staying power. He's still making a bad bet.
Twin messages from U.S. President Joe Biden in his parting words from what he called a historic NATO summit in Lithuania's capital that saw renewed support for Kyiv to join the alliance, but no specific commitments or timeline that Ukraine seeks. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky spoke at the close of the NATO meeting.
I think at the end of the summit, we have great unity from our leaders and security guarantees that the success for this summit. I think so.
Zelensky, who has crisscrossed the planet in the past year to rally Western support, defended Washington's decision to provide Kyiv with cluster munitions, weapons banned by more than 120 countries, for their indiscriminate killing capability.
Russia constantly uses cluster munitions on our territory, fights exclusively on our land, kills our people, and has continuously used cluster munitions for many years.
Biden departed for Helsinki Wednesday evening for a summit with Nordic leaders on Thursday. Patsy Wiedekuswara, VOA News, Vilnius, Lithuania.
From a summit of North Atlantic countries, we go to a summit of Southeast Asian countries. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is headed to meet with his ASEAN counterparts Thursday and Friday in Jakarta. The focus will be on trying to end the bloody 2.5-year-old crisis in Myanmar and responding to China's aggression in the South China Sea. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has that story.
The United Nations says more than 1 million people have been displaced by the violence in Myanmar. Myanmar's ruling military junta agreed to a 5-point consensus crafted by ASEAN just months after overthrowing the democratically elected government of de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi on February 1, 2021. The plan includes an immediate end to the violence, peace talks between the junta and its opponents, and the delivery of humanitarian aid. Indonesia's foreign minister, Retno Marsudi, called for an end to the violence.
Dialogue will pave the way to political solution. Only political solution will lead to durable peace. We are still very much concerned to see the continuing and increasing violences in Myanmar. Indonesia strongly condemns the use of force and violence. We strongly urge all stakeholders to denounce violence, as this is paramount to build trust.
One expert told VOA that ASEAN member countries are divided over whether and how to deal with Myanmar's military junta. Lucas Myers is Senior Associate for Southeast Asia at the Wilson Center.
So the maritime states, Indonesia, Malaysia, Singapore, Philippines, are much more pro-democracy in the Myanmar crisis, whereas the mainland states, which are oftentimes more autocratic in this case, are much more in favor of the junta.
Myers told VOA that in recent months, China has ramped up its support of Myanmar's military junta. Here again, Lucas Myers, Senior Associate for Southeast Asia at the Wilson Center.
And so really what China's hoping to do is ensure that the junta can stay in power. And they're essentially worried about this instability, and they're worried about the U.S. in the region.
North Korea plans to send its ambassador to the ASEAN meetings, while China says its foreign minister, Qin Gang, will not be attending because of health reasons. Top diplomat Wang Yi will represent China instead. Increasing aggressive military maneuvers by China in the South China Sea is also expected to be an important point of discussion for Blinken and his ASEAN counterparts. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
The future of the Russia-Ukraine agreement to export Ukrainian grain to world markets is again in doubt. This as Moscow threatens not to renew the deal after it expires on Monday. Dorian Jones in Istanbul reports that Turkey, one of the original brokers of the grain deal, is stepping up pressure on Moscow amid concerns of a global food crisis.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, meeting with Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky this week, pledged his determination to secure a new extension to the Russian-Ukrainian grain deal, which the United Nations and Turkey brokered last year.
Türk boğazlarından dünyaya açılan bir nefes borusu misali.
Erdogan said he hopes the initiative, which has delivered 33 million tons of grain to people who need it as a lifeline, will be extended on July 17th. With Ukraine a major grain supplier, the grain deal has helped to avert a surge in global food prices. But the agreement needs to be renewed every 60 days. Moscow says it will only agree to another extension if international sanctions are eased to allow the export of Russian grain and fertilizer. Zhao Gazimov is a professor of history and a specialist on Russia at Bonn University.
Russia is eager to get some more niches to omit the sanction regime for some parts of its economy, for some banks which are connected or related to the agricultural sector, and it's really very eager to smooth or to soften the sanctioning of its economy.
Despite international pressure, Erdogan has maintained close ties with his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin and has refused to enforce Western sanctions against Russia. Turkish officials say their relations with Moscow allowed Ankara to broker the grain agreement and warn of the danger of a food crisis if the deal is not extended. Mesut Cashan is a presidential advisor at Istanbul's Yeditepe University.
This is very important for global food price will be spike again. It is very important not only for Turkey and the NATO or the other countries, where the grain prices will be jumped.
Turkey's release Saturday of Ukrainian commanders held as part of a prisoner swap infuriated Moscow. The soldiers were supposed to stay in Turkey until the end of the war as part of the deal brokered by Turkey between Ukraine and Russia. Erdogan is also voicing support for Ukraine's bid to join NATO. By doing that, analysts say Ankara is sending a warning to Moscow over the grain deal. Yuruk Ishuk is a geopolitical analyst in Istanbul with the Washington-based Middle East Institute.
Turkey really wants the grain deal continue. And the signals were coming from Russia is that the grain deal is coming to an end. So here they decided before Russians take any more action to really end this grain deal, Turkey is sending a signal that there are many things depending on Turkey, including Turkey not joining so far any sanctions against Russia.
For Erdogan, the grain deal was a diplomatic triumph. If Moscow ends it, observers say there may be questions of how strong a broker he really is. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
And here are some other stories we're following from around the world. On Wednesday, Microsoft announced that Chinese state-linked hackers secretly accessed email accounts at several organizations, including government agencies, in a sweeping cyber espionage campaign. In Pakistan, an insurgent assault on a military base and clashes elsewhere in southwestern Balochistan province killed 12 soldiers and one civilian. A growing number of Kurdish women in northeastern Syria are signing up to join the local traffic police force. It's a development helping to break stereotypes about the role of women in society. And the International Criminal Court this week received testimonies from hundreds of Ugandans who say they were tortured by officials, including President Yoweri Museveni and his son. Uganda's government is rejecting these claims as propaganda. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Researchers led by the University of Alberta discovered two new minerals that have never been seen before on our planet. One of the minerals was named alaleite and the other alkenstantonite, which was named in honor of Lindy Elkins-Stanton from Arizona State University and the principal investigator of NASA's upcoming Psyche mission. The minerals were found in a 70-gram slice of the 15,000-kilogram El Ali meteorite in Somalia. In a press release, University of Alberta professor Chris Hurd says, quote, "Whenever you find a new mineral, it means the actual geological conditions, the chemistry of the rock, was different than what was seen before," unquote. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
From Washington, it's VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Karish. 18-year-old Americans of the so-called Gen Z generation will be able to vote in a U.S. presidential election for the first time next year. VOA's Veronica Balderas-Iglesias interviewed several young adults about the political and legal issues that are important to them.
Generation Z, or people born starting around 1996, is a more racially and ethnically diverse group than previous generations. As young adults, Zoomers, as they are colloquially known, tend to lean towards liberal politics, but they aren't a monolith. Political economist Brian A. Marks via Skype.
They tend to put party affiliation to the side and focus on the policy issues in particular.
University students who will be eligible to vote in the 2024 presidential election say they are keeping an eye on how politicians react to a series of conservative decisions by the U.S. Supreme Court, including those on abortion rights and college admissions. Emily Daly defines her political views as centrist.
The way that it's going right now, we're getting pushed back like 100, 150 years into the past because of issues like Roe v. Wade being turned over, affirmative action being turned over, LGBTQ rights.
Preston Raven, a journalism sophomore in Austin, Texas, was comfortable with the court's recent decision to end race-conscious admissions in colleges.
They should look at your application and base it off of that, not because of your race. Even though I am a person of color, I just think everyone should be equal.
Women's rights and economic policies could sway Elizabeth Andrews' vote, she said.
Definitely abortion rights were very, like, high on my mind during the last year, and student loans, of course.
It's too early to tell, however, if and how the Gen Z vote could impact the results of the 2024 general election. Associate Professor of Political Science at Emory University, Andra Gillespie, via Skype.
A 20-year-old versus a 45-year-old, the 45-year-old's going to have a higher likelihood of turning out to vote just because they're practiced at this and they understand how politics works a little bit better.
As she pondered the recent Supreme Court decisions, 20-year-old student Oishi Mukhopadhyay wondered about the overall Gen Z turnout at the polls next year.
I definitely will be voting, but I think it's a split issue with my peers because I do have some peers who believe that their vote doesn't count.
What can politicians do to change that perception? Robert A. Destro is professor of law at the Catholic University of America.
What you want to do is sit down and talk to
Gen Z voters. If we listen, they will tell us what concerns them.
Gen Z first-time voters, analysts pointed out, will also need guidance on how to register as they start to become familiar with the presidential election process in the U.S. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Extreme weather is wreaking havoc in several parts of the world, with record-breaking heat in parts of the U.S., China, Europe, and North Africa, elevated ocean temperatures in the Atlantic, and deadly flooding in India, Japan, and the northeastern U.S. For help understanding what's happening, I spoke with Dev Neoji, a professor of geosciences at the University of Texas.
Well, first of all, it's summer, and it's expected to be hard. But I think what you're saying is, why is it so hard for so long and over so many places collectively? The spatial extent or the spread, all of that is really quite dramatic, isn't it?
It is, and this seems abnormally hot for abnormally long in more places than normal. Is that true?
To a climatologist, when you say abnormal, then the question comes up, what is normal? And a normal is something which we use over a period of roughly 13-year period. And so when I say, is it abnormal, then it must be something which we have never witnessed in a 30-year period. So I think this is pretty extreme. I think for many places, this is abnormal. But for many places, this could also be something they have witnessed in the last decade or so.
Now, is this part of climate change, or is this a normal cyclical pattern?
When I am asked this question, I normally put that particular event through a two-step process. The first is this something that we can explain seasonally? Then maybe it is not. So in the current context, there is a little bit of the seasonality. But as we discussed, this is so widespread and so extreme, this is something more than seasonal. So the second test I apply is this something that can be explained by the natural variability? And in this particular scenario, we have just transitioned into what promises to be a strong El Nino year. And so there is a little bit of that signature that we should be accounting for, that we are into an El Nino pattern, we are into summer, and there's no doubt that there will be enough evidence presented in the scientific community that despite the climate variability and despite the seasonality, there is a contribution of climate change to this. So it is a combination of all three, and it just so happens to create the perfect storm, as has been the case in more recent times.
Well, so what are some concrete examples of how buildings can be built or cities can be planned to give us a climate we want?
Perfect. So once we recognize that cities change climate and we can design cities to change the climate the way we want, then there are these obvious things that we have seen and we have all experienced. One, the more trees you have, the more green cover you have, the cooler it will be because you have shade. That's second, whether you make the cities as tall skyscrapers or whether you make them as series of sprawled out city, also depending on where it is located, can have an impact on the winds and the clouds and so forth. So there's no one single recipe. The third part by which people have been designing cities which are much more climate friendly and creating an amiable climate is by putting water bodies. We can put lots and lots of water bodies which allow both a cooling effect as well as if we have excess rain, they become a means for draining out that water and not causing flooding. And then fourth, of course, is using the material on the roads, which is not tar black, but a different kind of a reflective coating, which can actually radiate out the heat rather than holding it, and thus reduce the temperature.
Professor Dev Neoji is a professor of geosciences and a professor of civil, architectural, and environmental engineering at the University of Texas at Austin, where it is a balmy 39 degrees. Professor, thanks so much for your time today. Thanks for your analysis.
Thank you. Stay cool.
And finally today, some sad news from the world of literature. Milan Kundera, the Czech-born writer who went into exile in Paris in 1975, has died. Sabrina Sito manages a bookstore in Prague, the setting for his most famous book.
So Kundera is one of our most bought authors here at the Globe Bookstore and Cafe, and he's really talked about a lot in discussions that we have for literature events as well, and it's a shame that his passing happened and he won't get to publish any more books.
And for more, we turn to the AP's Charles Deladesma.
The Czech writer and former dissident Milan Kundera has died, aged 94. Czech media reports Kundera, whose dissident writings in communist Czechoslovakia transformed him into an exiled satirist of totalitarianism, has died in Paris. The writer's most famous work, The Unbearable Lightness of Being, opens wrenchingly with Soviet tanks rolling through Prague, the Czech capital, that was the author's home until he moved to France in 1975. In 1989, the Velvet Revolution pushed communists from power, and Kundera's nation was reborn as the Czech Republic. But by then, he'd made a new life and a complete identity in his attic apartment on Paris's Left Bank. I'm Charles Deladesma.
And that's going to wrap it up for us today. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, visit us online at voanews.com and follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Stay safe and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In yet another undemocratic move, the Venezuelan government has barred opposition candidate Maria Corina Machado from holding public office for 15 years. Machado, a 55-year-old engineer and former lawmaker, is leading in the polls for the primary to select a unity candidate to face President Nicolas Maduro in a 2024 election. The United States supports the Venezuelan people's constitutional right to elect their leaders through free and fair elections. The decision to disqualify Maria Corina Machado from participating in the electoral process deprives the Venezuelan people of basic political rights, declared State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller in a statement. Venezuelans deserve the right to select a candidate to participate in presidential elections in 2024 without interference. The Organization of American States also condemned Machado's disqualification, saying the regime resorts to disqualifications and proscriptions to cling to power and liquidate any likeness to democracy, while it deepens the political, social, humanitarian, and economic crisis the country is living. Venezuela has the world's largest proven oil reserve, but food and medicine remain scarce and expensive. As many as 7 million Venezuelans, nearly a quarter of the population, have fled the country. While the economy has started to grow again, the annual inflation rate remains at over 400%, according to the central bank. The United States remains deeply concerned by the ongoing efforts to remake the composition of the National Electoral Council of Venezuela. A strong and independent council is indispensable for free, fair, and competitive elections. Ensuring all Venezuelan voices are represented in the National Electoral Council adds to its credibility and bolsters voter confidence. We stand in solidarity with all Venezuelans in their efforts to achieve free and fair elections in 2024. The restoration of democratic institutions and an end to the humanitarian crisis in Venezuela, says spokesperson Miller. We will continue to work with our international partners to address the urgent needs of Venezuelans inside and outside their country. The United States will also hold accountable those who seek to thwart the will of the Venezuelan people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.